Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. I'm so glad you guys are tuning into this episode. Whatever it is that you're dealing with today specifically or going through at the moment, I just hope that your takeaway from this episode is going to give you what you need. Is it hope, inspiration, validation, some tips on how to treat this or detox more affordable? Whatever it is that you need today, I hope that that's what you get from this episode. And if you want to continue to help me share my voice and our voice in the community, please go into the about of this podcast, scroll to the bottom, click on that donation link. Welcome to Lyme and Beyond with Tanya. And my guest today I have the pleasure of having is Dr. Pamela Cipriano. She is a nurse practitioner and she is with the Practice of Health and Wellness in Connecticut. But she also got into the Lyme community because of her son. So it was her determination to kind of fight back with the gaslighting that goes on within this community to find a proper diagnosis for her son so that he could reclaim his life. So I'm excited to kind of dive in a little bit to his personal story and then just talk about all the different things that she's learned along this journey, what she sees within the community, and how she does her approach with her patients. So going to be a packed full episode with all sorts of great things. So super excited to have you, Dr. Cipriano. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me.
So let's just kind of, if you don't mind, if we can kind of just start with your son a little bit, kind of, I know that you were already in nursing school, you were in the medical community when all of this started with your son, but then it obviously kind of transitioned your path into the Lyme world, right?
It did. So I was an ICU nurse for years before I became a nurse practitioner. And at 6 years old, he had gotten bitten by a tick and he had the bullseye rash, and his pediatrician put him on, if I have to guess, 10 days to 2 weeks worth of antibiotics. He had no symptoms whatsoever throughout that entire time. So that happened at six. At 19, we had gone scuba diving and he'd been diving since he was 12, but he didn't dive between 15 and 19, just because of those teenage years. So 19, I took both my kids scuba diving in the Bahamas. We were about 100 feet down and he had a lot of pain in the lower pelvic area. So I brought him back to the hotel room and did a quick physical on him, and I can find what felt like the tiniest hernia I could find. So his pediatrician felt that it was very small, but he was in a lot of pain, so sent him to the surgeon. Well, the surgeon actually left the operating room to talk to me to find out if he had a connective tissue disorder, because what they found was his entire abdominal wall looked like Swiss cheese. And there was no reason for this. He was 6 feet tall, weighed maybe about 150 pounds. He was a singer. He had smoked cigarettes a couple of years at that point. So they're trying to figure out why this is happening. So after the surgery, you know, went back for the post-op visit, and the surgeon was trying to figure out, was it because he has a powerful voice? Well, his voice is powerful, but not enough to blow out his abdominal walls.
Right.
And he was only smoking for 2 years, so it couldn't have been the cigarettes. And I knew nothing. I knew as much about Lyme disease as every other mainstream doctor knows about Lyme disease, which is absolutely nothing.
And so I had Connecticut.
And I'm in Connecticut, and I had no idea why this was happening to my son. Completely forgot about the bullseye rash he had 13 years earlier. He was the one that reminded me. So now he has a surgery, and there's always a trigger with chronic forms of Lyme disease. So you can have gotten bitten by a tick 10 plus years ago and have absolutely no symptoms whatsoever, but you have some kind of a trauma in your life, whether it's a car accident or a death of a loved one or surgery. And now your immune system drops for that short period of time, which allows the bacteria to take over. And that's exactly what happened with him. So after the surgery, he started with testicular pain. He started with difficulty urinating. My biggest concern was the ilioingual nerve that can be entrapped in the mesh. And spoke with the surgeon about this, spoke with the nurses who were in the operating room with him, and they all documented that it was isolated. So I knew it wasn't that. Then we thought it was an allergy to the mesh. Found out what the lot number was for the mesh. There was no recall on this mesh. We went through so many different ways trying to figure out what was going on with him. His symptoms continued to get worse and worse and worse. So that started at 19. Now he's 25, and now he can't urinate. It was Easter Sunday morning. I was working as a hospitalist because now I'm a nurse practitioner. And I had all the doctors in my phone, luckily, And I got in touch with the urologist who was treating him, and he was so wonderful to meet us at his office to teach him how to self-catheterize, because the last thing I wanted to do was bring him to the ER. So now he had to learn how to self-catheterize himself because the inflammation was so severe, he could not start the stream. So then he had cystoscopies to see if there was something that was preventing the urine from coming out, to see if he had an obstruction. And everything was normal, 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 normal. But the only doctor, after seeing surgery, he saw two different neurologists. He saw, gosh, his primary care doctor. I can't remember all the doctors. GI, he saw. Urology was the only one that actually screened him for Lyme disease, because local testing is god awful. Local testing, you have the ELISA first. If the ELISA is positive, then you get tested for Lyme disease. But the ELISA is a terrible test. The sensitivity and specificity is atrocious. I don't even know how it was ever approved. So about little less than 50% of cases are actually accurate. So 60 plus percent of people who get this ELISA actually have Lyme disease, but they're never tested for it. And if they were tested for it, the testing is awful as well, because the bands that are being tested are not necessarily related to Lyme disease. So you have the IgM and the IgG. The IgM has two out of three that are supposed to be positive. Well, they're all related to Lyme disease. But the five out of 10 that are supposed to be positive for the IgG, there's only three bands that are related to Lyme disease. So you can have five out of 10 bands positive, they have nothing to do with Lyme disease, and be told that you have Lyme disease. So the whole test is terrible. Anyways, he never did get tested for Lyme disease. He got screened twice, and both times it was negative. And so now he's 29 going on 30. And meanwhile, from the time he's 19 until 29, I'm doing nothing but researching to figure out what is going on with my child. And I finally found one research article in the Journal of Urology that had his exact symptoms. It was a case presentation of a male patient who had my son's exact symptoms, and it was Lyme disease. And so I contacted the researcher, and that's how I found out about the International Lyme and Associated Disease Society. I found Dr. Horowitz, who's retiring soon. I went away for training with him. I did a 2-week preceptorship with him. And then I started my son on treatment. And so it was a month before my son's 30th birthday that I told him that I knew what it was and that he had Lyme disease. And so, as luck would have it, I sent his blood work out to Germany. I used, I'm trying to think of the name of the lab there.
Is
It'll
it
come to
Arvin
me later.
Labs?
It's exactly. It was negative. He tested negative for Lyme, but he was positive for mold. Then I sent his blood work
With
out to
Arvin
Igenix
Labs?
with Armin
Oh,
Labs. Yep.
that's
Igenix,
disheartening to hear. Yeah.
completely negative. For Igenix. I knew this was going to be Lyme disease because of the case study that I had read. And so now I have everybody who's in the medical field in the family telling me I'm making a big mistake treating my son with antibiotics because I'm not following CDC guidelines. And I said, "You bet your ass I'm not following CDC guidelines, because I'm trying to save my son's life. And if I follow CDC guidelines, my son is not going to survive this." And so I ignored everybody, because I feel like mothers have an intuition, especially with their children. And what happened was, I was going back. Now I'm a member of ILADS, and I'm going back through all of the other previous meetings that they had had. And I found a meeting with Dr. Burscano where he's talking about the natural killer cells, the human natural killer cells. It's also called, it's either called HNK1 or CD57. And if that number is below normal, it can be related to Lyme disease. And if that number is related to Lyme disease and it's below normal, you're not going to get a positive Lyme test, because your immune system is so poor. So anything below 60, you can have a false negative Lyme test through Igenix, through anywhere.
Oh,
My
that's really
son's
good information to know because, as you know, Igenix, Arman Labs, they're fabulous labs,
They are.
but just
But they're still
another,
testing. Yep, they're still
yeah.
testing your immune system's ability to show that you have this disease process. My son's level was 10. To this day, in this, my gosh, how many years? Almost 10 years I've been treating Lyme patients. I've never had a patient with a CD57 of 10. Never.
Wow.
He didn't test positive for Lyme disease until that 10 became 59. And that's when he finally showed bands through Igenix that he had Lyme disease. And at that point, he had been treated for about 3 years on antibiotics.
Wow. That is
So,
just, It's crazy and it's sad and it's scary, but you know, that's why I do this podcast. We got to shed information in new light, right? Like, this is not super, super common, right? Obviously, you've been treating Lyme patients for 10 years and you've never seen a number that, you know, that was this low. So, but it's just going to show you that sometimes we have to do a clinical diagnosis, right?
And a clinical diagnosis.
All on board with that. I think they're fabulous.
Yep. And if you look at the research, there is no test that is 100%. There's not one test that we've ever created that is 100%. So the clinical diagnosis has to be part of the whole diagnostic process. And that's where these poor patients are being failed by their providers terribly. Mm-hmm. A lot of people, you know, it's multifactorial. It really is. And the podcast isn't long enough for me to go into absolutely every reason why this is, to be honest with
right.
you.
Right. We have so many different topics we could have a whole episode on, right?
Exactly.
It's maddening. Exactly. Yes.
It really, really is. But finding a doctor who is part of ILADS and is Lyme literate is definitely the way to go. Because if you go to your primary care, you're going to get 2 weeks tops of antibiotics and you're never going to get better.
Or if they don't know what to do with you, they'll send you to an infectious disease doctor.
And they know less.
Please don't
Absolutely
go there.
Less.
Please
exactly.
don't go there. Yes.
And it's
yes.
unfortunate. It's unfortunate that they don't feel it's necessary to go away for training for Lyme disease. I don't understand the logic behind that. It's not a regular infectious disease like other infectious diseases. This one has its own rhyme and reason. It's the only test that I'm aware of that the IgM doesn't necessarily mean you have a new infection. The IgM can be that you've had this for such a long period of time, but your immune system is so poor that it still keeps picking it up as a brand new disease. The IgG, I remember getting a phone call from the Department of Public Health because I had a patient who tested positive for, was Rocky Mountain Spotted Fever or Ehrlichiosis? And I had, even though it was an IgG positive, I treated him anyway. And a year later, I get a call from the Department of Public Health because the state is behind on everything, clearly. And she's asking me about this patient. And I had to go into the chart to find the patient because I honestly completely forgot about this patient. And so I'm saying to her, you know, this was a year ago. This was positive. And she goes, yeah, we're a little bit behind, a little bit behind. So she said to me, I said, it was IgG. I said, but I treated him anyway. And she goes, well, IgG with tick-borne diseases means you still have to treat. And I said, oh my God, I feel like I'm in the Twilight Zone. I said, you are the only person that is not part of ILADS or go away for training for tick-borne diseases actually understands this. I was shocked that she knew this. Shocked.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I can't.
Well, kudos
I
to
can't
her
name...
because there really are some, you know, I sometimes go down that rabbit hole of Western medicine, like, ugh, right? But there are some good practitioners out there. And just you know as well that not always is it these doctors' faults. It's what they didn't get taught in medical school, right? Like they
what
have
you
to,
said
need
is
to have a
correct.
Whole new, you know, training protocol on Lyme disease and the upcoming things that surround it. But then again, right, playing devil's advocate here, there are doctors that don't care. There are doctors that will gaslight you. There are doctors, right? And so it's a little bit of both, but I do love it when I hear from traditional Western medicine practitioners that they believe in Lyme. They understand our testing is inaccurate, you know, like all these things. It's like a breath of fresh air to hear. So
definitely is. And I completely agree with you. I think what angers me the most about mainstream doctors is, okay, maybe you weren't taught it. You have so many patients coming into your office with the same exact symptoms. Why not try and educate yourself? That's what I had to do.
Right.
I certainly wasn't taught this. When I was in school to be a nurse practitioner, we had an infectious disease. Our professor told us there is no such thing as chronic Lyme disease. Do you think I allowed that to resonate in me when I'm trying to save my son? I took that information, rolled it up into a little ball and threw it in the garbage and then tried to find a reason why my son was so sick. And when I read that article about Lyme disease, the last thing I thought was, well, when I was in school to be a nurse practitioner, they said there is no such thing as chronic Lyme disease. Like that wasn't even part of my logic. My logic was just trying to save my son. So
right.
That's where I do fault the mainstream providers, is not getting out there and educating themselves.
Right. And, you know, not that this is what this episode is about, but, you know, in order to keep an active license, right? Like you have to go and get continuing education credits all the time and different things. What are they teaching people? Like, I don't know. We, it is very, again, whole nother episode, right?
Exactly.
So
Exactly.
you, the mama bear, you know, take your son under your wings. You're his best advocate. You figure out that it's Lyme disease and you treat it. And I take it he's got his life back and thriving.
He's doing much, much better. He still has issues with his bladder, nothing like it was. He's able to manage life a lot better. He has to tweak his diet now. He has to start detoxing again. So once you have Lyme disease, you always have to make sure that you're treating your body like a temple. You really do. Because if you don't, there can be one straggler left over that will start the process all over again. And so when I have patients who come to me and say, I've been treated for Lyme disease 3 times, it's because they weren't treated properly, number one. And number two, they weren't given all the information that they needed about their diet and how to detox for the rest of their lives. My diet is exceptionally clean. Do I mess up every so often? Of course I do. I'm human. But for the vast majority of days in the year, my diet is super clean. So the one day I might mess up and have pizza or, you know, a cookie or something else like that, I make up for it by detoxing my body so that that doesn't resonate in my system because I know how bad things are.
Right.
And
And
that's
like
what I
you
do with my
mentioned,
patients.
yeah. And like you mentioned earlier with your son, you know, he had that trauma of the surgery. And I see that a lot too within the communities is, you know, people will treat, they'll get in remission, and then a death in the family, a divorce, a childbirth, you know, any type of physical or emotional trauma on the body. And then boom, the Lyme has taken over their body. And so, of course, I am not a practitioner, right? I'm just a Lyme patient who had to learn a lot along my journey. But my thoughts have always been a few different things. And you can agree to not agree with me. Yes, please shed some light on it as well. So my thoughts have always been that there are many layers to this journey that you need to address. It is not just killing, right? We need to kill, we need to detox, we need to address mold, we need to address parasites, we need to address metal toxicities even. We need to address our nervous system. We need to unstick those blocked traumas. We need to work through the emotional part of this journey that we just went through because it's like a grieving process. And I truly believe that if you address all of those things, and then again, treat your body like a temple, right? Like keep a strong foundation. Nothing can get you down and no pathogens can take over.
You're absolutely right.
And I
You're
mean,
150%
I
right.
literally am like walking proof of this for the last 4.5 years because I've had some trauma in my life. I had some deaths in my family. I've had a lot of things going on and I've addressed all of those things. And I do. Pizza's my favorite thing. So why'd you have to bring that one up? But you know, I have a good diet, but I don't care if I go out to eat. I don't care if I go to the fair and I have a corn dog. I give myself grace, right? We and everything in moderation in my eyes, but I believe that if you keep a strong foundation, you can stay in remission forever. Like, I
That's the truth.
just believe that. So it's, you know, people that go back to their old ways and no, I do not have food sensitivities anymore after being well, right? And did I know? I don't know. Introduce things back slowly, right? And see if you're going to react because, as you know, we're all so different. But I truly just live my life wild and free, however I want. I take good care of my body, my energy, my sleep, my emotions, all of that. And I'm just healthy. And I think that we can all get there as well. So, okay, this is interesting that you bring up that your son deals with UTIs, right? There's so many different things that oftentimes don't get talked about or the correlation of Lyme disease. And so it sounds to me like UTIs can be a common thing within the Lyme community.
So when he was suffering from the symptoms of a chronic urinary tract infection, but he wasn't testing positive for urinary tract infections, I took a course with Ruth Kriz, who's a nurse practitioner and specializes in chronic UTIs. She retired, and when she retired, she asked my permission to put my name on her website. So if people are trying to find a nurse practitioner who does understand about chronic UTIs, they could find me, and they have found me. I have not had one patient with chronic UTIs that didn't have Lyme disease. No, not one.
Really?
So every patient I've had so far, and they're all over the country, I actually have one in Australia, that I test them. I always recommend getting tested for tick-borne diseases because of what happened with my son. And I have not had one person who has not tested positive for at least one tick-borne disease. The vast majority are Lyme disease. I've had people test positive for Bartonella, which also affects the bladder. And I've had people test positive for tick-borne relapsing fever. So the bladder is a reservoir and it's holding urine, but in that urine can be the bacteria. And the bacteria can get into the bladder wall and actually disintegrate. There's a mucosal covering over that bladder wall to try and prevent the bacteria from actually entering. It can actually disintegrate that mucosa to show just the bladder wall now. And that's when you would hear about, like, just went right out of my head. The chronic UTIs. I'm so sorry.
No, you're
Not
good.
ulcerative colitis. It's for the bladder.
It'll come back to you, I'm sure. It'll
It
pop in your
will.
head. Bring it up when it
It
does.
will.
Yes. So chronic UTIs, that's so interesting that you say that. And we hear a lot, right? Especially by Dr. Klinghart, who talks about all the time, and I share this all the time on my Facebook page. If you've been diagnosed with ALS, Parkinson's, MS, so many things, right? Get proper testing for Lyme disease because all of these people are finally, well, a lot of them are finally getting an actual proper diagnosis so that they can have hope to get well and regain their health. And so it sounds like maybe we need to kind of add this onto that list, right? UTIs, because I never would have thought about that. And two, you know, I recently had a pediatric practitioner on, and she was kind of diving into how children symptoms are so much different, one from boy to girl, and then also from adulthood. Like their symptoms can be, you know, headaches or extra growing pains or, you know, so many things. And so we really can't just streamline these symptoms or Lyme disease because I know people that has just had a gut issue their whole life. It was actually Lyme disease. Like you
Yes,
just
yep.
never know. And so maybe we need to kind of start talking a little bit more about UTIs because I don't think that that's talked a lot about.
So there's a company called MicroGen DX that specializes in chronic urinary tract infections. And whether you have Lyme disease or not, you're going to get some type of bacteria that's going to show up. They have a phase one and a phase two. Phase one is going to be something that you get at the local lab. Phase two really shows the DNA of the microbes that are in the bladder wall itself. So I have had patients who have Lyme disease, but are showing so many different bacterias in their urine from MicroGen DX. But interestingly, when I get rid of Lyme disease, all of those bacterias subside. So, I don't have a really good answer for that. The patients are on antibiotics for a prolonged period of time. The antibiotics I'm giving for Lyme disease aren't necessarily going to be sensitive enough to kill the bacteria that's in the bladder. So there, that's part of it that I'm not really understanding how this happens. But I do know when we do a MicroGen DX before treatment. And then we get MicroGen DX after treatment, and there's no bacteria found, and the only thing I treated was a Lyme disease. That's just amazing. It really is. So whether the Lyme disease itself, the Borrelia burgdorferi, is causing these other bacteria to come out and affect the body, and then when we get rid of that, the others die along with it. I'm not really sure how that works. But I can tell you that once I do get rid of the Lyme disease or the Bartonella or the tick-borne relapsing fever, the urinary tract infections go away too.
Amazing. Just like when you treat Lyme disease, your symptoms and all a diagnosis from Parkinson's or MS,
And
they
MS and
just go
ALS,
out the
yes.
window, right? It's amazing. So just all the more reason for us to have hope no matter what diagnosis we have, right? If we can get the proper
Exactly.
diagnosis and do treatment, we truly can regain our life. So you just brought up Bartonella. So let's kind of move into that if we can. So Bartonella is, I think, you know, that one thing that I think you don't have to get bit by a tick, right? Like you can get scratched from a cat or something, right? So like it's just one of the co-infections of Lyme disease. But with that comes what we call Lyme rage. And a lot of times this could just show up as, you know, unstable temper control or, you know, just so many different things. And oftentimes we don't understand why we're so angry and we have, you know, little patience and we lose our temper so often. And what's sad about it is that we're dealing with Lyme disease, right? Which we do have a lot of brain fog, but we don't have, like, for the most part, total memory loss. So it's like we're realizing that we're flying off the handle, but we don't understand what's going on. And so I know that you deal with a lot of patients with Bartonella and the whole neurological disorders that come with this. So can you just shed some light on that?
Yes. So Lyme, babesiosis, and Bartonella can all cause neurological symptoms in tick-borne disease patients. When you have Lyme and Bartonella, or Lyme and Bartonella and babesia, that's when you're going to have more psychiatric and neurological issues. So right now I have a patient who has Lyme disease and Bartonella, and he's been in and out of behavioral health at least 3 times. He has, when he's not stable, he has auditory and visual hallucinations. He is an amazing person. He really is. I've never seen anybody try so hard to get better. And his mother, I mean, she is so dedicated to his well-being that she literally does anything possible to get this kid help. So when I had come aboard, nobody was treating him for the Bartonella. Everybody was treating him for the Lyme disease, but nobody had actually even discussed the Bartonella. So that's where I came in. And when I first started him on antibiotics for Bartonella, all his symptoms came back. The rage, the visual and auditory hallucinations came back, which almost broke the family apart because things that he...
I was just going to say, they probably weren't very happy with you, right? What'd you just do? You brought all these things back.
Yeah. So I had to stop everything, and we had to start these medications in baby doses. So any antibiotic that I was prescribing that came in pediatric form, we would have to give half the pediatric dose. And then, like, after a couple of weeks, increase it slightly. And after a couple of weeks, increase it slightly. And after a couple of weeks, increase it slightly. Until we got to the dose that his body weight required. And so now we're adding the next med. So it's a very long process for him to be able to get treated because I can't give him the medications that another person would be able to take right off the top because of all the bacteria that these antibiotics are killing off is causing more inflammation in the brain. And that's what's causing these hallucinations and the rage to form. So,
yeah, and I'm glad that you brought that up because I think it's a good time to kind of touch on that maybe. You know, when we go through this journey, we talk a lot about herxing and detoxing. Is it really a herx? Am I oversensitive? Am I dealing with MCAS? Am I, you know, like so many things come into play. But I feel like your thoughts are the same as mine. Like, we do not need to throw everything at somebody and have them just fall to pieces in order to treat, right?
Right.
And I know that every practitioner has their own opinions on pretty much everything, right? But a lot of them will say, oh, you got to push through it. You got to push through it, right? And then some of them will say, I'm allergic to it. Well, are you really allergic to it? Or do you have mast cell going on? Or is your body just really sensitive? Like we're so individualized. But that's just an important thing to bring up, Dr. Cipriano. So I'm glad that you did because no, don't kill yourself, right, in the duration of your journey. Is it an easy journey? No, absolutely not. It's rough, but slow and steady can always still win the race. And so you have to resonate with the practitioner that you're working with. You have to both be on the same page in order for you to work well together.
And you just said something that's very interesting and very true. You have to trust the provider you're working with. And if you guys are clashing, find another provider. It's not worth it. Not everybody is going to get along with one another. I haven't had an issue like that with my patients. But if I did, I would be referring them to somebody else because I can't expect everyone to get along with me. You know, I think I'm a pretty easygoing person. I try and work with patients. I really try and listen to them because I know I've had issues myself in the medical field where they weren't listening to me. And, you know, I ended up having a thyroid cancer, which was growing into my trachea and suffocating me. And for 2.5 years, I couldn't get one person to listen. I was diagnosed with anxiety, of course, because I'm a woman. Went to a pulmonologist and had a pulmonary function test, which was so abnormal. And my SATs went down to 60 just from walking around his office. And he literally diagnosed me with anxiety. And to this day, I've never referred to him.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. I don't need to have anybody else go through what I went through.
Yeah. Cause you know, we have a hard time seeking out practitioners in our area, right? Cause we've been gaslit. Most of us have for many years, but when you find someone that has amazing reviews, everybody talks about them on social media. Like, this is the best practitioner. If you don't resonate with them and you don't feel comfortable, it's not the best practitioner for you.
Yes. And I completely agree with that. I really do.
And you need to feel like you're in a protective space when you're treating this journey so that your body can get into that rest and digest mode, right? Because we're constantly having to work on our nervous system. And so just please know that it is okay to fire our doctors, right? Mm-hmm. I've been fired as a patient. It's okay to fire our doctors as well. So I just think that that's really important. So this patient that you had, so you have to go really slow, right? Because
exceptionally slow with him. I really have to go exceptionally slow with him because the last thing I want to do is set him backwards. So I want to kill the bacteria. I don't want to kill the patient, you know? So that's why with him, everything is very slow just to make sure that he's able to tolerate the treatment.
Right.
And I do that with everyone. I have never told a patient just to push through it. I've stopped a medication for a few weeks to try and give their body a break and then restarted it. It's always a little iffy with Bartonella because with Bartonella, it's a very stealth bacteria. And if you stop treatment prematurely, it will come back with a vengeance. So that's the one I don't necessarily stop the treatment. I'll decrease the dose because I'm still trying to kill off some of this bacteria so it doesn't get a head start.
Yeah. So, you know, we talked and there's a lot of talk about neurological Lyme. Most of us have it. And it was interesting that you said if you have Lyme, Bartonella, and I believe Babesia together,
yes,
that's just like a triple whammy, right? Well, I am an overachiever. I decided to have all three of those myself. So let's talk about, you know, we talked a little bit earlier about UTIs, how we don't hear it's, you know, super common that there's this correlation, and obviously that there is. So let's talk about seizures, right? Because this is a really scary topic. I personally, other than watching somebody have a seizure on television, I've never seen it happen in real life. I've never personally had a seizure, but I could only imagine that the fear that we're feeling when we're having it, either as the actual person going through the seizure or your loved one or your parent, right? And seizures are a huge part of this journey. I hear it all the time that people deal with seizures. So kind of maybe if you could just shed some light on what exactly is a seizure, right? Like, why does it take place? How is it correlated within this Lyme umbrella?
So for Lyme disease, so seizure activity in general is a neurological disorder where the neurons are just overfiring and your body is taking a hit. So it is a convulsion that happens throughout your entire, but there's several different types of seizures. There's petit mal, there's grand mal, there's silent seizures. There's so many different types of seizures. There's myoclonic, there's a number of them. When it comes to Lyme disease, it's because of the inflammation in the brain that's causing this, and it'll cause an autoimmune response in the brain. So you have this bacteria. So this is what happened with me and my patients. There's a lot of doctors who've been practicing longer than I have and treating Lyme longer than I have and have never had a patient with seizures. And I got them back to back. So I had a 25-year-old and a 14-year-old who came to me back to back. They didn't know each other. They were unrelated. But within a week or so of each other, they came to me. The first one was a 25-year-old that was having panic attacks. So his mom was seeing me and she was telling me about her son who was having these really severe panic attacks. And I said, he should be tested for Lyme disease because I have so many patients who have panic attacks, and it's because of a tick-borne infection. And sure enough, he did have Lyme disease. So I started him on antibiotics. And the way I do the antibiotics is I'll start one. I tell them to wait a week, then start the second one, then wait a week, start the third one, and so on and so forth. Because that way, if there's an issue with any of the antibiotics, I can kind of pinpoint which one it is. And I usually have them start doxycycline, especially since doxycycline is a pretty safe antibiotic and most people have been on it for one reason or another. So he was on the least offensive antibiotic for 2 weeks. And not only did he have his first ever seizure, he went into status epilepticus, which means he had a seizure that wouldn't stop and you'll die from that. So they got him to the hospital. They had him on an Ativan drip. They had to sedate him. They had to intubate him and they had to get him out to Hartford Hospital. And he was at Hartford Hospital here in Connecticut, I think 5 days in the intensive care unit, had lumbar punctures, had, you know, MRIs, a bunch of tests to figure out what was going on because he never, ever had a seizure before. And boy, did that family ever get gaslit with the providers on the ICU unit? I mean, they came up with all of these fairy tales. You know, the lumbar puncture fluid was normal. There was nothing normal about it. His white blood count was over 64,000. You know, there was nothing to suggest there was anything wrong with it. It was cloudy, so there's a bacterial infection. You had some people saying that, yeah, it did show Lyme. Others saying it didn't show Lyme. So I had to have a conference call with the parents, and I had to go through all the labs from, because I'm part of Hartford Hospital. I'm not an employee, but I'm affiliated with them. So I'm able to get onto Epic to see what my patients' lab reports and things like that are. And they were not only were they told the wrong information, not one provider would call me back. So I called Hartford Hospital, the intensive care unit, several times to explain what was going on with this patient. And I wouldn't get a phone call back from infectious disease, neurology. No one would return the hospitalist. No one would return my call. So that was very upsetting. So when he finally got discharged and he came back to me, now he's doing good. He's on epileptic medication. I start him on the dapsone protocol from Dr. Horowitz. So he's on only 25 milligrams every other day. The protocol goes up to 200 milligrams a day. So he's on the baby dose at this point. 2 weeks later, has three seizures. So there's no coincidence here. The bacteria is causing the die-off of the bacteria. The antibiotic is causing the die-off of the bacteria. That die-off is causing inflammation in the brain. And that inflammation is causing the seizures. In my own personal opinion, you don't need to be a rocket scientist to understand this and follow the yellow brick road here. The neurologist I was talking to could not follow this. They're telling me, no, this is a coincidence. There's no way that I started one antibiotic and he went into status epilepticus and then I start another antibiotic and then it's always 2 weeks later, he has three seizures back to back. That's not a coincidence. I don't know where they're coming up with these terms, coincidence, but now he's on three or four different anti-epileptics. He's on breakthrough nasal spray, which is midazolam. He's on clonazepam that can melt on his tongue, and he's still having seizures. And there was nothing to suggest he actually had epilepsy. When they did the EEG, it was normal. I don't know how it was possibly normal, but it was completely normal. The EEG was normal after the status epilepticus, and the EEG was normal after the three seizures. And then when he was hospitalized again for more seizures, the EEG was still normal. So there's never been a time when this young man ever had an abnormal EEG. And the EEG is that proof positive this person has has epilepsy. So that's him. I have a 14-year-old who I start on antibiotics, and she starts with myoclonic seizures. So myoclonic seizures are more like trembling of the legs. You don't lose consciousness. You don't lose time. You remember everything that's going on. That progressed to a regular grand mal seizure. She was at Connecticut Children's Medical Center, and that neurologist would not return my phone call. And that neurologist gaslit this family to make them feel as though they were doing everything wrong with this child. They would not come to terms that she had epilepsy. She never had epilepsy until she started an antibiotic for Lyme disease. So at the most recent ILADS conference, I did a poster presentation from an abstract I put together, which I'm hoping to get published in the near future, with these two patients with the seizure disorder. Both of them had autoimmune encephalitis. They both tested positive with the Cunningham panel. The local testing that checks for autoimmune encephalitis, again, it's local testing, so it's not that great. One test was positive, one test was negative. They both started IVIG. They haven't had a seizure since. They both had low gamma globulin levels, gamma globulin G. But again, the neurologist knew nothing about what I was talking about. So I was out, I felt like I was out in a rowboat in the middle of the Pacific without an oar. That's exactly how I felt. So I had no idea what I was doing. I had no one to collaborate with. I'm talking to the neurologist. They didn't know what I was talking about. And so I went on the Mayo Clinic site. And that's where I got a lot of the research that I received. And I was able to get both of these young people out of this horrible seizure activity and back to their normal life with IVIG.
Wow, it is scary, and I want to go back to the first patient that you had with the seizures, because we truly must be our own advocate during this journey. And I mean, I shout this every day, literally from the rooftops, it seems like. And there's so much I want to say on that. So here's a fabulous example. I have a friend who will rename nameless, right? Who I believe her daughter has Lyme disease. And even though she's been in the hospital a couple of times, I believe it's Lyme and the mold is what triggered it. But nonetheless, I am not a doctor. I am not a practitioner of any sort, right? It's just the things I've had to learn on my journey. So I said, okay, she's in the hospital. Fine. Try to convince him to do a Western blot, ELISA, whatever they're going to do. It's going to probably be wrong, right? We know this, but at least something. So it took them several days to convince the doctors to even test for any of this. So I check in with her and they're negative. She doesn't have it. And I said, okay, that does not mean she doesn't have Lyme. And then her daughter's getting worse. And now she's on steroids. And I'm like, oh my gosh, that's the worst thing you can do for a Lyme patient, right? So back in the hospital, I asked to see these lab tests. And you don't have to be a rocket science. They are positive. They're highlighted in the values, this value negative, this value positive. But she was told they were negative. What does this tell you? You have to be your own darn advocate. If they tell you you have a negative test, you've got to look at your labs. You have to look at your tests. There's Google now, right? There's so many ways that you can look things up. And not all tests are, you have to be a rocket science or a doctor to read, right? Most of them say, hey, you know, you 0 to 50. If you're under 50, you don't have something. If you're over 50, you do. Your number's right there. It clearly states. So I guess my point of sharing that story is that we have to be our own advocate because we don't know why doctors tell us things that they tell us, you know? And what I personally ran into during my journey was you go in for whatever you want to go in. Let me see if I can think of an example. Let's say I'm tired, right? They're going to test my vitamin D levels. But they do this whole panel, okay? They come back and say, oh yeah, no, your labs look great. Well, because they were looking at my vitamin D. They were looking at one little section that they were focused on, right? But then when you get the labs and look at everything, there are so many things that are off. You're telling me my labs are normal? No, they're not, but they were normal because that's all the doctor was looking for. They had something set in their mind, what they wanted to check, right? And they checked those little lines and those were normal. But then come back and say that your labs are normal. I mean, this is what I'm
So
saying that you.
in the medical field, and this is medical, not naturopathy or functional medicine, just medical. If the labs are slightly off, you'll be told they're normal. In functional medicine, we have specific criteria. Like they may be within the normal limits, but they're not normal for functional medicine. We want them even tighter. We want to make sure that your body is functioning absolutely properly. But in the medical community, you know, if you're a little anemic, they don't really worry that much about it. It's just a little anemia. So, oh, it's essentially normal. You have nothing to worry about. Well, why am I a little bit anemic? You know, what if I'm postmenopausal? I don't get my period any longer. Do I have a GI bleed that I don't know about? I mean, those are the things in functional medicine that we look at the entire body, not just one little lab. But you're absolutely right. If you go to the mainstream doctor and you get your labs done, unless they are absolutely atrocious, you're going to be told that they're normal.
Yeah.
Which is really scary. It's very scary.
Sorry, I got on a little soapbox there for a minute.
Okay.
We tend to get so passionate about so many of these topics. So, okay. So let's talk about, you've mentioned a lot about antibiotics. So is that your main go-to course is antibiotics? Do you do any herbs and... It depends on what you
come back positive for and what you're seeing me for. So the patient with the seizures, absolutely antibiotics. In fact, that 25-year-old had a PICC line placed because I was so concerned about the inflammation in his brain and not being able to get all the bacteria out, because not everything crossed that blood brain barrier. So I had a PICC line placed and he got Rocephin. I have an ALS patient who was misdiagnosed with ALS, but by the time she came to see me, she was completely paralyzed from the neck down. She has Lyme disease. So if she had seen me in a more timely manner, I might have been able to treat her. I have another patient, so she had a PICC line placed. I have another patient who's being diagnosed with ALS. We contacted the neurologist to let them know that his Igenix test came back positive. He didn't care. It wasn't local testing that was positive. So he still diagnosed him with ALS. ALS is a diagnosis of exclusion. If there's no other reason for these symptoms, then you have ALS. Well, we have a reason. His Igenix was positive for Lyme disease. So he got a PICC line placed. Normally, I would have treated him with antibiotics first because his symptoms are so severe. Now, if you have if I have a patient who just got bit by a tick, 1 month of antibiotics right off the top. Once I'm done with antibiotics, then I switch everything over to all natural antimicrobials. I haven't seen anything to suggest that only all natural antimicrobials will get rid of Lyme, especially the patients I get chronic Lyme, Bartonella, babesiosis. Those are the three Bs that are going to change your life. So I have not seen that, but I have seen where antibiotics have to be used. Once the antibiotics are done, then I'll switch everything over to all natural antibiotics. Now, I have to say too, when I'm ordering these antibiotics, these patients are also getting probiotics to be taken twice a day, 2 hours apart from the antibiotics to protect the microbiome. I like kinds that are high in bifidobacterium because that's a bacteria that's really going to keep your brain nice and healthy. They get seropeptase, they get liquid stevia, they get monolaurin, they get vitamin D, they get glutathione, they get NAC. They get everything that they need to keep their body healthy. And by the time they're done with this, their body's actually healthier than before they even had the Lyme disease, because most of them weren't taking any of these supplements.
Right.
Some of the newer research suggests that after you're done with the antibiotics, you switch everything over to the natural antimicrobials to just stay on them forever. Because even though we're using them as antibiotics, people take these things for overall health anyway. And if you have one little straggler left over, these things may be able to kill off that straggler and not allow this process to start all over again. So like I was saying before, when I have a patient who comes to me and says, this is the third time I'm being treated for Lyme disease, you weren't treated properly the first two times because you didn't get the supplements that I prescribed, that I was taught to prescribe, to be able to pull some of these things out of hiding, be able to kill off this bacteria, be able to penetrate, like with rifampin or rifabutin, the cyst form of the bacteria that can't get killed off by regular antibiotics. So this is what I mean about infectious disease. This isn't a regular infectious disease where you just throw an antibiotic at it and it gets better. This is more like a cancer where you have to really understand the pathophysiology of this bacteria to be able to kill it properly.
Yeah. And so, for the record, I'm the three Bs and I never took an antibiotic.
That's impressive.
I was undiagnosed for 7 years, ended up bedridden with a caregiver and didn't know my name. And that is when I left the traditional medicine, right? Because I feel like they left me for dead. I'm crazy. I'm not going to get well. And so, no, I never took any pharmaceuticals during my journey, and I am completely well. And so, therefore, I am not a fan of antibiotics. I am 1,000,000% fresh infection. Do the antibiotics. I am. Antibiotics work for some people. They don't work for some people. But I love the fact that, and these shows, like, I want to share all the information. Just because I think it's information I don't like or don't agree with, that doesn't mean I don't want to share, right? It's all about learning and educating and spreading awareness so that we can make our own best choices to be our own advocate. But Dr. Cipriano, I love that you said of all the supporting things that you're doing for your body, right? Because that's one of the biggest things with the antibiotics is that it just destroys your gut, and then you get rid of that, and then you have to work on your gut. But I love all of the different modalities that you talk about that you incorporate in with your patients. That's incredible. They come
And
out
that's,
healthier, right?
well, that's the thing. That's just what they're taking. That doesn't even include what we offer at the office. We're offering IV vitamins. We offer infrared sauna. We offer halotherapy. So we're offering things that are going to help your body to improve even without the antibiotics. But like I said, the patients I get, even like Dr. Bruner in his books about Lyme disease, he always recommends at least 1 month of antibiotics to try and kill off as much bacteria as possible before you switch everything over. So you're really a very fortunate person that you didn't need to take the antibiotics because that's not the norm. I don't think that people understand antimicrobials, all natural antimicrobials, as well as they should. I had to take classes on it. I went to school for functional medicine. So I understand better how they work. But unfortunately, I've had patients that have gone the all natural route and then ended up coming to me afterwards because they just didn't get better.
Yeah.
So I never stopped what they were taking unless there was a reason why they weren't seeing a naturopath and they were trying to do this themselves, then and they weren't always on the right thing. But if they came from a naturopath, I kept them on everything they were already taking and then just added on the antibiotics and added on some of the modalities we do here at the office.
Right. And we're all so different. We're all so individual. If there was one way to treat Lyme disease, probably none of us would be sick, right?
I
It's just
wish there was,
not an
honestly.
easy journey. It is
It isn't
not.
at all. You're absolutely right. And that's why I describe it more like a cancer than an infectious disease, because I don't know if you knew Neil Spector, the physician.
Yes.
So he was an oncologist and ended up with Lyme disease and it attacked his heart, had to have a heart transplant. When he got back to work, he changed his profession from oncologist to Lyme specialist. And he told his patients that getting treated for Lyme disease or any of the tick-borne diseases was like having cancer. You're going to feel so much worse in the beginning, but you're going to reach that goal. You're going to reach that finish line, but it's going to take a while for you to get there. There's nothing easy about treating Lyme disease. So my big thing is, if you get bit by a tick, go on antibiotics immediately, or go on some kind of antimicrobial, whether it's pharmaceutical or nutraceutical, to try and kill off this bacteria before it sets into your body.
You
Because if
get
you have to,
one
yeah, because
chance
if you have to
only.
find
Yep.
somebody like me, like by the time I see somebody, not only have they had this for at least 10 years, but they've gotten bitten by multiple ticks. I have one patient right now, honest to God, she must have gotten bitten by at least 30 ticks over the last 30 years. The only reason she did so well getting rid of, she had ehrlichiosis, she had Lyme disease, she had Bartonella babesiosis and tick-borne relapsing fever. The only reason she did so well was because she is a health nut. She lives on nutraceuticals. Her whole life has been so healthy. So I don't think it had an opportunity to really do the damage that it would have done for other people. So going on the antibiotics, I couldn't believe that with less than 3 months of antibiotics, she was completely better. We took her off all the antibiotics. I just had to put her on some because she just got bit by another tick.
Oh no. Oh no. Yes. Well, I mean, you are
But
in
she's my
Connecticut,
only
right?
one that really, I mean, her body is, she really treats it like a temple. Eats
Yeah.
exceptionally clean, exercises great, and she's in her 70s. She's absolutely magnificent.
That is incredible. I love
Yeah.
hearing that. So I know that we both definitely agree on detoxing. Detoxing is so important. What are
So
some
important.
tips that you can give the listeners on, ways that they can do that? Or is this Herx reaction? Is it from overkilling, or is it because my detox pathways aren't open? Like there's many ways. A lot of people take Epsom salt baths or magnesium flake baths to help through. You know, there's a lot of people did Alka-Seltzer Gold for many years, I heard about. And then, of course, you know, they take it off the market. And I know that I share Dr. Rawls made a little video on how you could make it yourself, right? But so there's so many different things out there. So I always just like to kind of pick your brain on a few of them that you think are really good ways to detox.
Something as simple as lemon water. The only time I would tell somebody to use Alka-Seltzer Gold was when they couldn't tolerate the lemon water for one reason or another. But it does the exact same thing as Alka-Seltzer Gold does. It helps to decrease the inflammation in the body. It alkalines the body. So an alkaline environment, it keeps it much more difficult to have a bacteria, even cancers, survive. There is, and it also helps to clean out the liver, the pancreas, and the spleen. I mean, glutathione is my go-to, liposomal glutathione. My patients call it the stinky one because do I have it here? Yeah, I have it right here. So I keep it by in my desk because I take this twice a day myself just to keep my detox pathways open. I had a patient who I started on treatment for Lyme disease. She got considerably worse, and I realized she had to have been had an infestation of mold, and she did. She had so much mold in her system that I had to actually prescribe her amphotericin B nasal spray to be able to get rid of the fungal sinus infection she was getting. Mm-hmm. So
Have you picked up on a correlation if people are extra sensitive to glutathione that they may have mold toxicity?
I haven't seen that yet.
Okay.
I haven't had any patients who couldn't take glutathione, but I have had patients who were getting worse on the antibiotics, and I realized it was because they did have mold toxicity.
Okay.
But the glutathione, yeah. I haven't had anybody who couldn't take it.
Okay. I hear a lot of sensitivity with that, and I actually had the pleasure of meeting you, Dr. Cipriano, last month at ILADS, which was fabulous. I believe it was one of the speakers of the doctors that was talking about it, that if you're extra sensitive to glutathione, you may have mold or some type of metal toxicity. And that was kind of the first time I'd heard that. So I just thought I'd ask your thoughts on that. But so speaking,
I test everyone for that. I test everybody for mold, mycotoxins, heavy metals, before they even start treatment. And they all go on a detox pathway or detox protocol to open up their pathways before we even start treatment.
Love that. It's people think, and I get it, right? We're sick for so long, and then we get a diagnosis. Let's just go in and kill it. And that's just not the way it works, right?
Yeah. Like
we
can because overkill. If you do, you're going to actually get worse.
Yes. And you're going to take a million steps backwards, right?
You're absolutely right.
We do. But I get it. I get where our mindset is kind of like that, right? Like just, oh my gosh, just kill it. I'll suffer. I'll do whatever. No, you're actually doing more harm in your healing journey than not. I believe that even detoxing can be more important than actually killing the pathogens at times. Like it's just so important.
Mention too is if I put somebody on a binder for mold and they're getting worse instead of better, they're in an environment where there's still mold. And I've had patients who said to me, nope, you're wrong. I already moved out of that environment. I'm in an entirely different apartment. Okay, well, your new apartment has mold in it because I've never had a patient take a binder and not get better. If you're getting worse, you're still in a mold. Because what happens is the mold, we're using a binder to get the mold off of the receptors. But while we're doing that, we're actually encouraging the mold to come back into your body from the environment and attach to those same receptors. And so it's a catch-22. And the family, her parents went in and put the Petri dishes around. And sure enough, there was mold in her apartment. They didn't realize how severe it was until they moved her into their own home where they tested to make sure there was no mold. And they moved her furniture in and she became so reactive. It was in her furniture. It was in her clothing. It was in her shoes. They had to get rid of absolutely all of her belongings for her to get better. Get on the detox pathway, use the binders. Now she's no longer in a mold infested environment. And then I could get her better for Lyme disease and the three B's. So it's amazing what I've seen that isn't like it's not taught. Like a lot of this stuff is anecdotal because of what I'm actually seeing my patients go through. And that's why I'm doing so many case reports so I can get this published so other providers can read about my journey so that they have something to use to, look back on and say, okay, this is why it's happening.
I love that. I appreciate you so much for taking the time to do that because it's information that we've got to get out into the medical community because we need help. So, real quick before we kind of tie this up. So, like I mentioned, we got to meet each other last month at the ILADS Scientific Annual Conference. And if you are on my Lyme and Beyond with Tanya Facebook page, you will see that I shared a few weeks ago that Igenix is coming up with this rapid finger stick test to test for Lyme disease. And it's in kind of the clinical studies now. But Dr. Cipriano, you have this in your office, correct? That you are kind of working along beside them trying to get this approved so that this is something that can be in traditional doctor offices and urgent cares and things like that. And from my understanding, speaking with Igenix at the conference, is that we're hoping for hopefully early next year is what we're looking for. And so, can you talk a little bit about this rapid test? I know it's free for people. Anybody that's around Connecticut, go see Dr. Cipriano and check out this test. So share what it is.
So it's called AccuDart. It is a 30-minute test. It's a finger stick, and it gives you a grading of very, very positive to moderately positive to negative. Right now, my office is IRB certified with Igenix. So anybody who wants to come here for it's free because it's part of the clinical study. If anybody wants to come here to get tested, you'll get a finger stick, which is going to be tested through the AccuDart machine. And then you'll also get a venipuncture, which is going to be compared with the FDA-approved Igenix testing that they currently have now to see is the AccuDart actually accurate. So is a negative actually negative? Is a positive actually positive? It does only check for Lyme disease. But again, we know those clinical markers as well for other some of the other tick-borne diseases because they don't always come back positive. But if you have any symptoms of Lyme disease, the brain fog, fatigue, joint pain, headaches, muscle pain, GI problems, chronic urinary tract infections, neurological disorders, I would really, you don't have to have remember getting bitten by a tick. The vast majority of people who have Lyme disease never remember even seeing a tick. So these ticks are so small, they can bite and release. The longer they're on you, the more bacteria they're giving you. But as soon as they bite you, they've given you bacteria. And it all depends on your immune system. It all depends on your diet. If you're eating the American diet, you're going to feel really sick for a really long period of time until you start changing your diet with treatment and everything. But yeah, if you want to venture out to Thomaston, Connecticut, we're offering it. Like I said, it's free of charge because it is a clinical trial. And
I
you'll
love
be
that. And
helping
it
to
is
get this approved.
testing. My understanding is that it's testing for IgG and IgM, correct?
That's correct.
Okay. Yeah, no, that's amazing. I love, I know that a lot of people that are going through their journey now feel like there's not been any new innovations or hasn't been any new, things to help us. And trust me when I say there really has been, because I've been at this for, well over a decade, and things are so much better now than they were 10 years ago. However, we have millions of miles further to go, but things
No,
are
I have to
getting
agree with
better.
you. Yep, I
Yeah,
have to agree
things are
with you.
getting better. And so I love that you're doing this test in your office. That's amazing, and that you're participating and doing all these clinical studies to help others and help other practitioners kind of learn all of this. So, do you do telemed or is it all in person with Connecticut? What tell
So,
us a little
because I
bit
have
how
patients throughout the country, and like I said, a patient in Australia, I do a lot of telehealth
you
visits.
do.
So
Okay.
I need
So
to
that
see you in Connecticut once a year to be able to prescribe medications for you. My patient in Australia has a fantastic functional medicine provider. I sent her all of the information about Lyme disease because she didn't know anything about Lyme or any other tick-borne diseases. So I sent her pages of information that I have and I shared with her so that she felt more comfortable prescribing the antibiotics I had recommended. And she's doing, I mean, this poor girl, she said if she didn't find, she was literally suicidal. She did not think she was going to survive. She really didn't because everybody's telling her that there's nothing wrong with her. You know, they can't find anything wrong with her. And you can't be sick that long without a diagnosis and being told it's all in your head. Any provider who says to a patient, it's all in your head, needs to find a different profession. Because if your ego is so huge that you can't be truthful with yourself, that you may not know everything, and maybe you need to be more educated, then you're in the wrong profession. You really are. Because that's a disservice to your patients.
I completely agree. And that is why I became suicidal in my journey. Because doctor after doctor after doctor got tired of seeing me, and they just kept telling me it was all in my head. You're overworked. You're overstressed. It's all in your head. If you don't go get therapy, you're not going to get well. If I can't get well, I have no hope and I can't do this anymore. So it's unfortunate, but that is why we as a community, we all kind of rally together and just continue to share awareness and information and educate one another so that less and less people will have to go through this gaslighting journey and lose the hope. So listeners, as always, I will put the website and ways that you can reach out to Dr. Cipriano in the description of this episode. She, again, is with the Practice of Health and Wellness in Connecticut. And did we miss anything? I mean, I'm sure we could go on for a whole nother hour. This was packed full of so much good information, and I just really appreciate you taking the time to share with me and the listeners and also for what you're doing with the patients in the Lyme community.
I really appreciate that. And if I could say one more thing, that word I could not remember for the bladder was interstitial cystitis. So anybody diagnosed with interstitial cystitis, it could be from Lyme disease.
There you go. So many things, right? Well, I couldn't think of it, let alone probably even pronounce that word. So I'm glad it came back to you. Well, Dr. Cipriano, it's been a pleasure. Thank you so much. I really appreciate you.
Thank you so much. And I really appreciate you having me on your show. Thank you.
I sure hope you listeners enjoyed that episode. Whether it's hope you needed, a little inspiration today, or just maybe some validation that what you're feeling, what you're going through is real. Maybe you needed tips on how to treat at home, ideas, thoughts, detoxing, whatever it is. I truly just hope it's what you got out of today's episode. That is my only hope, is just to give back to this community in any way possible. So go to the about of this podcast, scroll down to the bottom and find that donation link. Go ahead and click on there, and anything that you'd like to donate or offer is all just going to go to help to pay towards the studio cost.